Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, San Francisco reacts to Oakland changing the name of its airport, and Amsterdam takes several steps to try and fight back against over-tourism. Those stories next in the news.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:20, Mark addresses seat swapping on airplanes. Flight attendants say it happens almost every flight, and the request to exchange seats doesn't always have a happy ending. We'll have tips to help you handle the situation along with a map our 420 friends might find handy when traveling.
Yes, since it is today, April the 20th. At 11:35, Chris Elliott joins us from Aruba to comment on one of his latest columns for Travelers United. Chris asks, are flying cars coming soon? Or is this one piece of technology that still has a ways to go?
10 days ago, the country experienced a total eclipse. Reporter Clayton Whitehead was in Arkansas for the event, and we'll get his take at 11:50.
Whether you're listening live on KFBK or on the podcast, thank you for the privilege of your time. Welcome to the Travel Guys.
On the road again, rocking everywhere, man.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Beautiful day. I'm still licking my wounds, you might say, after the Kings' final loss of the season as they were eliminated from the playoffs last night. It was a sad moment. I'm a big-time Kings fan, Mark, and as you know, and the family gathered around the TV. We had our little watch party.
I can tell you about a day long ago, my friend, when Kings fans didn't even talk about the playoffs after January. So just the fact that now they're part of the mix and have a decent team that's worth going to see play, did I not see that they sell out every night at the arena practically?
Yeah, they're back to selling out. Ticket prices have gone back up. But anyway, it was a great season. And yes, I remember those days at the old Arco Arena.
25-30 wins. I was on the radio talking basketball back in the 90s when the Maloof brothers owned the team and some of that stuff was happening. While I'm sure it's disappointing for Kings fans, for those of us who have a little historical perspective, it's just nice to be a little above mediocre instead of awful for a change. And have some players that, you know, maybe they move up a level. Who knows? You know, wouldn't that be amazing to have an NBA championship parade in Sacramento someday?
Someday.
I lived that long. Went up to Fort Bragg this week, and
Tell me about that. Did you see our friends at the Noyo Harbor Inn, Scott, that we had on the air a couple of times in the past?
I did. Scott told us what a lovely boutique hotel that he had down there on the harbor at Fort Bragg, and what a great restaurant they had. The hotel doesn't quite have the room configurations that would allow a tour group to stay with him, but the restaurant, we sat down and talked to Scott. I think we're going to eat breakfast there a couple of days and dinner another day. And then when we went around town and we told folks where, you know, we talked to other people and they're like, where are you staying? Where are you eating? And we're like, well, we're eating down at the Noyo Harbor Inn. And they're like, oh, that's really upscale. Substitute the word expensive for upscale, because that's also what it is. But we had dinner down there and breakfast. And if you're going to Fort Bragg and you don't need a room with two beds, if you're a couple or you're a single and you can survive with one bed, the Noyo Harbor Inn is a lovely, lovely place. And the restaurant there is just, if you're going and not staying there, that would be a great place. They don't open for breakfast till 9 in the morning. The town of Fort Bragg doesn't really open up till about 11 o'clock, which is, you know, some tourist areas don't open until later in the morning, but Fort Bragg isn't really a tourist town. I mean, I guess maybe more so than anything else at this point. But and we were trying to figure out why, and it's because they have that fog bank in the morning. And people in town say, well, nobody, you know, until that fog lifts, nobody really gets out and moves around. And that's usually 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. So I found that kind of interesting. The skunk train is still in operation over there. Their tunnel collapsed about 10 years ago, so they can't run from Fort Bragg to Willits. But they run from Willits out to their midpoint. And from Fort Bragg, they do a little three-mile trip to a place called Pudding Creek, which is where the tunnel collapsed. So you can still ride the skunk train. You just can't ride it all the way through. And there's the Noyo Science Center there that'll tell you all about whales and the like. Of course, botanical gardens. And there are the highway folks have done a terrific job of creating turnouts up and down the area between Mendocino and Fort Bragg so that you can stop and get views of the ocean and take your pictures or just enjoy the view. Mendocino, of course, is a legendary little town there on the coast just south of Fort Bragg. So there's a lot to see over there. I can see why people are attracted. They're widening a couple roads over there, which tells me I hadn't been there in 10 years and tells me that there are a lot more people there in the summertime perhaps than there were before. But in April, in the spring, gosh, yesterday was a picture-perfect day in Fort Bragg, and there weren't that many people there. So, you know, if you're somebody who can go in the shoulder seasons, maybe think about that, especially over on the coast. And just know, though, that the road to get the only real road to get to Fort Bragg, Highway 20 out of Willits, is a slow road, and you need to allow plenty of time. Occasional logging trucks still on the road, but a lot of folks on that road, there's a lot of twists and turns. So if you've driven Highway 20, you're out there shaking, saying, yeah, I know that for sure. So just allow yourself plenty of time. Fort Bragg's about 4 hours from Sacramento. You know, you'll want to make a stop maybe in Williams at Grand Zella's or, you know, up the road in Upper Lake. Now there's a couple of really nice little boutique restaurants up there. So you can make some, you can piddle along the way, you know, kind of make some stops and drag it out, take a full day to get up there, spend a couple nights. Anyway, really had a good time at Fort Bragg.
Outstanding. All right. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we take the time to bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with the update, once again, here's Mark. Mark, what you got for us today?
Well, we've talked about for a couple of weeks here about the folks in Oakland deciding that they wanted to co-op the name San Francisco into their airport name. So this, of course, has first been met with amusement by the people in San Francisco and now by not so much amusement because they really feel like that this is kind of overstepping a boundary. It's funny. United has the most flights out of San Francisco, and they're not in favor of the idea at all. Southwest has 82% of the traffic out of Oakland, so by far the most traffic out of Oakland, and Southwest hasn't commented. And the fact they haven't commented means that they're probably okay with the idea. The Oakland folks are just trying to pick up on some of the panache that the name San Francisco has with travelers and point out the fact that, you know, I mean, actually you can see the Oakland airport from the other side of the bay, so... So San Francisco, the city, now has sued Oakland in court this week and said, no, you know, we have a trademark, San Francisco International Airport, and this is going to confuse people, and it's not in good faith. And so we'll just have to see, you know, what happens. It will play out, I'm sure, over the next few months, but it's kind of interesting. Even the San Francisco mayor came out and was quoted as saying, Oakland is rich in culture and wonderful people and has its own identity. It doesn't need the name San Francisco as part of its airport to stand out. So, yeah.
What was the name they were going to go with that Oakland wanted?
What they are going to call it is San Francisco Bay Airport, San Francisco Bay Oakland Airport. So San Francisco Bay is what they're putting in there. Yeah. As in order to try to keep from making it just a complete steal. It's a steal. There's no question about it. It's a steal. But, you know, if you can get away with it, why then good for them. Anyway, it's amusing to kind of watch. Last year we talked about a gold heist that happened in Toronto. And if you remember at the time, it was a whole bunch of gold bars. They came in. They were stored hypothetically overnight to be picked up the next morning. somebody showed up with an air bill and said, hey, I'm here to pick these up, and the air bill looked fine, and so they gave the guy the shipment, and it wasn't the right person. When Brinks came the next morning to pick up the stuff, they said, well, you've already been here. And they said, no, not so much. So at the time, you and I speculated that it would be almost impossible to do something like that unless you had somebody on the inside. And that's indeed the way it turned out. Police in Toronto have arrested six people in the $22 million airport gold heist. Police say it was an inside job. Apparently, they had they were able to print an air bill to pick up the stuff that came from Air Canada. So they had access somehow to an Air Canada printer that allowed them to print a duplicate bill and alter it in some way to make it legitimate enough that they were able to pick up the stuff from a secure area and make away with it. And, of course, the truck drove off and was never seen again. These were, interestingly enough, little tiny one-ounce gold bars. So there were 66,000 of them. And a one-ounce gold bar is not very big. So if you look at the second and third fingers on your hand, that would be about, it would be a lot thicker than the bar would be, but that would be about, you know, 1.5 times its size maybe. So there were a lot of these. And, of course, ironically, gold has gone up in value fairly dramatically here recently, has increased by about 15%. So anyhow, the folks who tried to make the greatest gold heist of the century, and the police commented that, you know, they did a really good job of covering their tracks, but perhaps the thing that did them in is there were too many people involved.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, when you and I are planning our big heist, you know, our we're all done heist, let's make sure, don't tell Sarah or, you know, anything.
Anybody
like,
else, you know, just between you and me.
Don't tell Stephanie, you know, I won't tell any of my staff. We just keep it among ourselves.
Got it.
That's what did these guys in. If you're flying, just know that you can't get on the plane with your junk hanging out or your female parts flopping all over the place because some airlines, there is, well, and this article from CNN says, you know, what are the rules? And the rules are kind of loose, and so to speak. And what it basically is that, you know, if you get on an airplane, and maybe, ladies, your top parts should have a little, your breasts should have a little more support or a little more coverage. There are situations here recently where airlines have asked people to please cover up better or get off the plane.
Is this the story about the girl in the T-shirt
and
no bra?
That's it.
T-shirt and no bra. My wife and I discussed that.
The
consensus in the conversation was, hey, you know, she was wearing a shirt.
Yep.
Isn't that enough?
Well, public decency, I think, is what we're talking here.
I think you're right.
And I think that ladies are saying, well, this is discrimination, and they probably have a minor point there because men's breasts aren't usually flopping around on a plane, and most men are able to cover up their junk when they're walking onto an aircraft and sitting down, you know, no matter pretty much what you're wearing. So, yeah, it is a little bit discriminatory towards the ladies, but it does point out that just like taking a bath and not bringing day-old fish and, you know, things like that, there are some common sense things that you have to use when publicly traveling. It's not all about you. And you may be very comfortable with what you're wearing, but if it's offensive to other people, why then the airline, it's a business. They have the right here, just know this, they have the right to say, hey, you know, you can fly, but you got to put a bra on, or, you know, put a jacket over it, or, you know, put some underwear on, or whatever it takes. So it's my point here is just that there are rules, and they're a little bit loose rules, but if you push the envelope too far, and you get the wrong flight crew or the wrong gate agent, then they may call you on it. And if they do, so if you want to fly extra comfortable, maybe carry something in your carry-on that allows you to add to your attire at the last minute if you need to. Yosemite National Park says it's getting so busy that they are going to require reservations on busy days this summer. We have posted a link to at travelguysradio.com. You can also Google Yosemite National Park, and you can see this. But basically, it's holidays, it's weekends and holidays up through June, and then it's every day from July 1st to mid-August. and then weekends and holidays until the end of October. So basically a little over half the year now, you're going to need a reservation in order to get into Yosemite National Park. You can get in between 5 a.m. and 4 p.m., and you will be required to have a reservation at the gate. So recreation.gov is where you get the reservation, or you can go to Travel Guys Radio and find a link there. This is National Park Week coming up, April 20th to 28th. So if you are thinking about getting out and enjoying the outdoors, this is a week that we celebrate all of our national parks. April 22nd, Monday is Earth Day. And so lots of volunteer projects and stuff are going on in national parks all over the country. We have our share of national parks here, of course, with Redwoods and Lassen and Yosemite and Sequoia. And so we have our share of national and many state parks, especially up in the Redwoods area. So get out and enjoy the parks this week if you can. And finally, our last story here has to do, it's another over-tourism story, which we have, this has come up a few times recently. Of course, the folks in Hawaii are, I wouldn't be surprised at some point in time to see some limitations on the number of people who can go there. Already there are limitations on the number of people who can visit some historic sites on the islands. Amsterdam is the latest one to pipe in, and boy, they are serious. They have been talking about this for a long time. Here's the problem, folks. We go on vacation, we go to these wonderful places, and then we trash them. And so that's a bit of a problem for the people who live there. And at some point, they say, you know, enough is enough. And that's what's happening in Hawaii. That's what's happened in Amsterdam. They've said too many people is too many. So they are going to cut back on the number of river cruises they're allowed to depart from Amsterdam. They are banning new hotel construction in Amsterdam. The hotels that are already under construction will be allowed to finish, but then they're not going to approve any more hotels. The number of people who can stay overnight in the city is going to be limited, and the number of people who can enter the country with foreign passports is going to be limited also. So if you are somebody who enjoys going to Amsterdam, know that perhaps the situation there maybe get a little bit more enjoyable, but not just everybody will be able to get in. I'm sure there'll be more developments on this, and we will keep you updated along the way. Amsterdam, one of the great destinations on the planet, saying, you know, enough is enough already. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Remember, check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Want to remind you that every Monday, Rudy's Hideaway, still offering their 2-for-$65 dinner special. Options are great. Choices include lobster tail, prime rib, filet bourguignon, chicken marsala, or golden fried prawns. With your entree, you get the Boston clam chowder, the baked potato, the vegetables, and the San Francisco sourdough, which also comes with something that you can get every day of the week if you simply say, I heard it on the Travel Guys, and ask for
the lobster special. $30, just under $30, $29.95 will get you a 6-ounce lobster and all the trimmings. I continue to say, one of the best deals in town.
There you go. Ask for the Travel Guys special, or for sure on Mondays, check out the 2-for-$65. Once again, Rudy's Hideaway, just off Highway 50 at Hazel. All right, coming up next here on the Travel Guys, we're going to talk about seat swapping. No, not that. Next, right here on the radio. Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, with you every Saturday at 11 a.m. And check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. All right, Mark, let's get to it. Let's talk about seat swapping. It happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's been a subject we've talked about before on the air here, but a couple of my flight attendant friends have said, you know, if you would really mention this again, it's happening a lot more often. People are getting on planes and assuming that somebody will be fine with swapping seats with them so that they can sit with whomever. In some cases, this is fine. If you're in an upgraded economy seat and you're on a window and the person who wants to switch with you has a window in the upgraded section, then you're probably going to be okay with that. Same thing, aisle for an aisle, you know, window for a window. If they're in a middle seat and you've got an aisle seat, then probably not so much. You know, you've got something of greater negotiating power. So for those people who get on the plane and need to switch seats, Please don't sit down in the seat that you want to switch to. Don't automatically assume, because then the person's going to get on, say, wait a minute, am I in the right place here? Somebody's in my, oh, yes, I'm in your seat. Would you mind switching with us? Stand in an adjacent seat or out of the aisle, out of the way, in the seat that you'd like to swap for. Don't make the assumption that the person is going to automatically, because, and the reason I say this is because that's kind of getting off on the wrong foot. You want to approach this nicely and just explain the situation and say, hey, you know, this is the seat that I have and this is the seat that I need. And the other thing is that it's sometimes humorous to me that why not ask the other person to move to where you are? Well, that's because you have an inferior seat. You know, look, if you've got the middle seat in the row in front of the restroom, you got nothing to trade. So go back there and sit down. And as one flight attendant said to me, you know, the reason that you're not seated in the seat that you want to be in is because you had a chance to buy it and you didn't buy it. So you're not there. With the possible exception of folks who are the people who buy the last seats on the airplane and, you know, can't get next to the person they want. If you kindly mention it to a flight attendant, especially if you're traveling with a family, they will probably try to help you if they can. But again, they don't want like to get involved in these situations because they get in the middle of something that the person who's asked to switch says no. You know, the other day, a lady who was in economy asked a guy to switch who was in first class. Well, I mean, that's not going to – and then made a big fracas over the fact that the guy wouldn't do it. Well, you know, come on. I mean, if you had a $10 bill and I had a $20 bill and you offered to trade me your $10 bill for my $20, I don't think I would do that. So seat swapping comes down to what do you have to sell? And when, if you're the person being asked – it's where do you want to draw the line and how nice do you want to be? And just know that you are not obligated to give up your premium seat for somebody who has a garbage seat unless you want to.
Good point. Good point. You know, I've never been in a situation where I needed to. You fly a lot, Mark. Yep. How often has that happened to you?
I see it quite a bit. And I would say it generally works out okay about two-thirds of the time, especially, again, if it's eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. If what you're trying to trade for is the same as what you have just a couple rows apart, then you're probably not going to be met with any issues. But if somebody has an aisle seat, you want them to go on a window, or they've got an exit row seat or something that they've picked out, I mean, you know, they're going to probably, they are within their rights to politely, and it should be politely, say no. One other thing I wanted to mention here before we go, today is April the 20th, which for some people out there stands as the fourth month and the 20th day, 420. So for our fans who are 420 fans and who travel across these United States, the marijuana you take with you is legal in some states and not legal in others. In honor of 420, we have posted a map at travelguysradio.com. It came from our friends at Travel Pulse that will tell you all the states in the country where it's legal and not, and whether it's medical or personal use or how much you can have and all of that jazz. Travelguysradio.com. Have a nice 420.
All right, off to Aruba with Chris Elliott when we return right here on the Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Hope you're doing well. It's time to bring back our international traveler and your favorite consumer advocate, Christopher Elliott, to the Travel Guys. Welcome back, Chris.
Hello, guys. How are you?
The man who wanders around the planet. I mean, literally wanders around the planet with one child still traveling with, right, Chris?
I'm still dragging one with me, yes.
I'm still dragging one with me.
The other two have left. They said, oh, can't do this anymore.
We are going to talk a little bit today. You did append an article a week or so ago about advanced air mobility, which really had to do with flying vehicles. I found it to be quite entertaining. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. I think that's the first time you've called one of my articles entertaining, but I'll take the compliment. Thank you.
Well, you have this great picture. I'll post this article, by the way, at travelguysradio.com for folks who would like to read it, and that will lead you down the rabbit hole to all of Elliott Confidential, and maybe you will become a smarter traveler by putting up a few shekels and becoming part of Chris's group. This is pretty cool. Tell us what you know about flying cars and when they might be coming and how that's all going to work.
It is such a sprawling topic that I'm not even sure I can do justice to it in a single column, but it's a thing. And as I say in the story, if you had told me even a few weeks ago that this would be a thing, I would have laughed at you because, you know, they've been talking about flying cars since before the Jetsons, you know. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, we had Elon Musk tease a possible flying Tesla. And then the next thing you know, my newsfeed is filled with these stories about flying cars. And so best I can tell, there are a few actual real flying cars. And by flying cars, I mean vehicles that are on the road and then they take off and fly. They do exist. But mm-hmm. mostly when you talk about advanced air mobility, you're talking about quadcopters, hexacopters. These are not things that you would find on the road. They're just like a personal flying vehicle. And we're quite far along in developing these. Some of them are being test flown. Others are getting started for real. Like you'll be able to soon take a quadcopter from Manhattan to JFK. The same thing in the Middle East. If you want to fly from Abu Dhabi to Doha, there's a flying taxi that will soon start taking you there. So this is actually real. The real question, though, is when can I buy one and can I actually fly it around? And there are quite a few obstacles to that, including the FAA needs to get its act together and, you know, figure out how to regulate flying at low altitudes. So it's, you know, flying cars are not here yet, but they're coming.
Now, I have to say that when you talk about, you say the word flying, and whether it's a car or anything else, you know, everybody's going, oh, I'd love one of those. I'd love one of those. But you know what? Like you say, there's a lot of hurdles. You would need some sort of aviation of like an airline or like a pilot, somebody that mm-hmm. that flies an aircraft. There's going to have to be special training and such to be able to do that. It's just not a matter of buying one and then jumping in and taking off.
Right. And there's actually a school in London that will teach you how to fly your flying car. So the people are working on it already. It's also there's some work being done, some very exciting work on autonomous flying vehicles. And I know that sounds crazy. A flying car that flies itself. What if something goes wrong? But the idea is basically that you wouldn't need to get all that training and that you'd be able to fly it by basically getting into the car, typing in your coordinates, and it takes you there. The thing is that we're pretty far from that. We haven't even figured out how to do that with cars yet. So, you know, maybe a few years away.
It's just the thing that pops into my brain is we already have drones running into buildings and different objects and stuff like that. So you've already got these drones up in the sky. My guess is there's going to be more of those. Now you've got flying cars. I mean, who puts the stoplights in the sky? Where's the stop sign or the left turn lane? Or, you know, I mean, is it just, you know, the Wild West out there? Or,
well, it's like that movie Minority Report where they're all flying close together, but they're somehow still, you know, each car knows where it is and they're not running into each other. You'd be surprised, actually, or maybe you wouldn't be surprised at how many comments, just like yours, I got on my story. People saying, "I'm a little older. You know, people can barely drive their own cars. What's going to happen when we start flying them?" Fair point. So the FAA has regulatory authority, and they are going to need to figure out what to do here. And I read a report that said the FAA was taking a crawl, walk, run approach to flying vehicles. And right now they are very much in a crawl stage. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have to figure out how to do these lanes and that sort of thing and how autonomous vehicles interact with other vehicles and even things like certification. Like, do you need to get a different kind of driver's license if you're going to fly? All those things have to still be answered before this thing becomes real.
You know, Mark, do you remember, wasn't that long ago, we had a conversation with one of our guests. Who was it? Was it our friend from Travelers United?
That's Charlie. That's Charlie Leoka.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know Charlie really well, and I talked to him for the story, too. He wants to split the FAA into two organizations, one that handles UAVs and AAVs, so unmanned aerial vehicles, and then the advanced air mobility vehicles that we would call flying cars. and then have them deal with basically being traffic cops at low altitude. And I think there's something to that idea. It's still very early stages, so we just don't know what's going to happen yet.
Charlie is always our guy. So it might not be the Federal Aviation Administration that runs this. Chris, it sounds like there are a lot of questions still to be answered on this. And so this isn't going to happen next week or next year, but but what you're saying is that we might finally be moving towards it at a faster pace.
Faster than you think, probably. So some people were leaving comments on the story saying this is not going to happen in our lifetime. I think that that's incorrect. I think it's going to happen sooner than that, unless they're terminally ill and they're going to die in a few days, then in which case they're correct. But I think, though, that there's a great deal of potential here. And you know, we talk a lot about airline customer service and how bad things have gotten. And the possibilities are so incredible. I mean, imagine instead of having to stand in a long line for a short commuter flight and get screened and wanded and sent through the metal detector and all that you could just hop into your own car and fly there. It could actually revolutionize the way that people fly, and it could change the airlines for the better. So now the airlines are going to be handling more of the long-haul flights, and we're doing the short-haul flights ourselves. That would be a very interesting world to travel in.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Chris Elliott, a consumer advocate, a friend of the Travel Guys, travel expert himself. Chris, you personally, what is it that I feel that I'm hearing you going, you know, this is really up my alley. I'm very excited about this. How do you see yourself taking advantage of this? And you kind of described it, your ability to pass the airlines by.
Oh, yeah. That would be so great. I mean, I'm going to be in the Middle East in probably a couple of months, and I want to take that air taxi and see what it's like. I think it's going to be an amazing experience, and I know that there's going to be more like that, more availability. It's going to get cheaper. Right now, a good flying vehicle like this is going to set you back about $500,000, which is a price that's out of the range for most of your listeners, or just definitely for me on a travel writer salary. But the prices will start coming down, and you're going to be able to start using them in more places. And you know, maybe in 5-10 years, it'll be a very different kind of conversation.
Chris, before we let you go, you told me before we started the interview that you were in Aruba. Give us a 60-second rundown on Aruba, the good, the bad, the ugly.
I'm staying at a hotel called Bukuti and Terra, which is right on the beach, not too far from the airport. I'm looking out at a beautiful ocean. It's the color is teal and dark blue, and it's just, there's a white sandy beach. It's very, very beautiful. Aruba is great. It's expensive. If you like sitting at the beach and you like beautiful, warm water, and you like spending a lot for your meals, this is the place to go to.
Wow.
Is there a downside to Aruba? I mean, you've traveled in that area before. Aruba above, below, the same?
The snorkeling is really incredible. It is, you know, they've got really beautiful coral reefs, and the water is kind of a see-through, very, in almost unlimited visibility. We're located only about 30 miles from the coast of Venezuela here. On a clear day, you can actually see the coastline. So it's very far to the south, so you're going to get a lot of the warm weather. The nice thing about Aruba, it's part of the ABC Islands. It's the Dutch Caribbean, and they are outside of the hurricane belt. So you can come here even in the middle of hurricane season. You don't have to worry about getting slammed with a hurricane.
Ah, perhaps the most important tidbit of information came there at the end.
Right.
A safe place to go during hurricane season. Thank you again for your time, Chris, and for writing a most interesting article about flying vehicles. Again, to our listeners, I will post a link to that vehicle at travelguysradio.com if you would like to read all about it. Elliott.org is an organization for those of us who are trying to make sure that consumers get screwed as infrequently as possible when we're traveling. So you might want to check that out. Chris regularly sends out dispatches, some of which would make you a smarter traveler and save you a buck or two along the way. So if you're an avid traveler, take a look at that. Chris, again, thank you. We'll catch up with you down the road somewhere.
Okay, you bet.
Travel safe.
10 days ago, the country experienced a total eclipse. Reporter Clayton Whitehead was in Arkansas for the event, and we'll get his take when we return right here on the Travel Guys. Hey there, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget you can find links to our special guests and so much more to make you a smarter traveler, always, at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark, I see you have road reporter Clayton Whitehead with us today.
I do. Clayton was back in Arkansas for the eclipse, which, you know, there were a lot of places to see the eclipse, a lot of different places to see it. And for some reason, Clayton picked Arkansas.
Well, I tell you, we had an interest list of travelers, and I decided to do it the old-fashioned Democratic way. So I put out a survey. I knew of a number of cities along the path of totality that were offering activities specifically directed at groups. So I let people vote, and Arkansas won.
Aha. Uh-huh. So what is that? You went to Arkansas. You spent some time in Little Rock.
Yes.
All right. So, making people a smarter traveler. What's the one cool thing in Little Rock? Where did you stay? Where's a great place to have dinner or lunch?
Well, certainly the number one attraction in Little Rock, and I think it's safe to say probably all of our Arkansas, is the Clinton Presidential Library and Museum, right there in downtown Little Rock, which is at once a repository and tribute to our past president, William J. Clinton, and also his wife, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
And president, you know, just as a sidebar here for a second, no matter what team you play for politically, presidential libraries are something that you should visit, because even if it was somebody that you didn't particularly care for, there's a lot of information and a lot of learning, and you may come out of there disliking the person even more than you did when you went in.
Or respecting them more.
Or respecting them more.
You know, Clinton's presidency obviously had at least one really, really bad decision. But, you know, when you're there, you see the bigger picture. And you see the extraordinary amount of good things he and his wife did as a team. And that he did as president. And that our country accomplished during his term of office. So I think it was definitely an uplifting experience.
Where'd you eat in Little Rock?
We ate, well, I tell you.
Anything memorable? I mean.
Well, I have to say, when Californians go to a place like Arkansas, they just need to be prepared for a very, very different diet. It's Southern cooking. Most things are going to be fried. Most vegetables are going to be overcooked. Most things are going to be seasoned with bacon. That's just the way things are there. I sadly had...
Wait. Most things are seasoned with bacon. You talk about that like it's a bad thing.
Well, I had a number of people on my trip who were vegetarians or vegans or had special dietary needs.
Before we talk about the eclipse, was there another... There's an art museum in northwestern Arkansas that Sam Walton built, right?
Well, not quite. Sam Walton's money. Bentonville, in the extreme northwest corner of Arkansas, is the home of Walmart, and Sam and his wife are both deceased, and they had four children. So one daughter, Alice, took her quarter of the fortune and built what is truly one of the world's great museums, even though it does happen to be out in the middle of the boondocks. It's called the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. It is architecturally stunning, and the collection is definitely growing into the space, including... some Wayne Thiebaud's. We Northern Californians love him, including Norman Rockwell's, including everything that you can deem as American art, sculptural art, painted art, Chihuly glass displays. It's absolutely a world-class museum, and it's only 201,000 square feet in size. But when they grew into that space and Ms. Walton, I'll call her, learned that new acquisitions were going into the vault. She said that was totally unacceptable. So here, just 13 years after their opening, they're already building on 140,000 additional square feet of gallery space.
Your Walmart shopping dollars at work.
Whoa. It is that totally.
Mm-hmm. We've told people a little bit about Arkansas. Let's talk about the reason that you're here, the eclipse. You took 70 people, two full groups, back to Arkansas.
Right.
And how did it go? I mean, on TV, right, Tom, we saw all these folks cheering and clapping and talking and responding. Folks who were part of the eclipse, you
right.
saw that?
Yeah, it was all over the national news. Obviously, a lot of us couldn't be there, but it was well depicted. Where was your viewing location, Clayton?
Our viewing location was a place called Bowbrook Farm, which is in rural a rural area outside of Little Rock, probably about 15 miles out of town. I paired up with four or five other tour operators. All total, we had about 250 people who had bused or flown in from all over the country. And that gave us the critical mass that was necessary to acquire this space and keep it private. Something I learned from attending eclipses in the past is that, sure, you can just show up and sure, you can stand on the side of the road and just watch it. But what happens when you need to use the bathroom? What happens when you need food? What happens when you need a place to sleep, you know? So I was really keen on the idea of having something that was specifically planned for motor coach tourists, older adults from around America.
Okay, so the eclipse itself, you sent a pic. Some of your folks sent pictures. You sent one.
Yeah,
looked like you guys got totality. So, I mean, you had a clear sky.
We were beautiful, stunning weather day, about 80 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. The entire event took a little over 3 hours. Of course, it's a very slow process for the moon to move in front of the sun. Then we had almost 4 minutes of totality. And then the very slow process repeated itself as the moon moved away from the sun. So all total, about 3 hours. And people reacted in every possible way. We had some people who are eclipse chasers, people who have been to total eclipses all over the world. The vast majority of the entire crowd, certainly mine and everyone else, were people who were witnessing their first total eclipse. And it brought out all sorts of emotions, patriotic emotions, cheering and excitement, people who started crying uncontrollably. It's a strangely emotional experience when something so profound happens that we have absolutely no control over whatsoever. It starts getting cool. It starts getting dark. The street lights come on. We were in a rural area, so there was just one street light out in the parking lot, but it came on. The animals get eerily quiet. There was a goat enclosure near where we were sitting, and the goats were clearly disturbed, but quiet, completely quiet. The birds quit singing. Dogs quit barking. Everyone just goes quiet. You know, I'm a spiritual guy. In my opinion, it was a God moment. People were in awe of what was happening, and you just had to sit there and look at it. You couldn't take your eyes off of it.
So before we let you go, we're talking with Clayton Whitehead from Sports Leisure Vacations about seeing the eclipse in outside of Little Rock, Arkansas. Would you go again? Would you go to that much trouble to go to see another one?
I totally would, but it's going to be a wait. The next total eclipse in the contiguous states. There's one in Alaska in 2033, but the next one in the contiguous states is, I believe, 2044. So we're going to have a bit of a wait. Now, that's not to say that's the next total eclipse. They're happening all over the world every so often, but in terms of the North American continent, we got a bit of a wait.
Iceland is the next, maybe.
I believe so.
Yeah.
And then some of the people, the chasers I was talking to already were talking about, yes, Iceland, and I believe Norway, Finland is going to have one. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about a lot of future, very international plans to get on board with that.
We've been talking here on The Travel Guys with Clayton Whitehead, road reporter for Sports Leisure Vacations. Clayton, it's been great to have a chance to talk first person with somebody who was there with a large group and got a chance to see such an amazing, amazing thing as the total eclipse. Thank you.
It was a pleasure, Mark and Tom. We'll see you next time.
Clayton does such a great job of his description of, you know, it was a godlike moment and stuff. I thought that was really, 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 really well done. So you had to be there, kind of, sort of, huh? Listen, good news. A Southwest flight that had a little bit of a maintenance problem in the sky got diverted to St. Louis yesterday that was headed for Sacramento. We actually got an email from a friend of somebody who was on the plane, said they thought Southwest handled the situation very well. Everybody is already home or on their way home and will be here today. Next week, we're going to talk about renewing your TSA membership. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching.
All right, my friends, stay well. See you next Saturday, 11 a.m. We'll do it all again.